All right, welcome on to our continuing season preview series here on the Dunked On Basketball Podcast. We're doing the Charlotte Hornets today. And to do that, I am joined by Spencer Percy, the managing editor of Queen City Hoops, and also a high school basketball coach at Fork Union Military Academy. What's up, Spencer? How are you?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you having me.
All right, well, how despondent on a scale of 1 to 10 is everyone about the MKG injury?
Yeah, it's definitely a 10. It's pretty devastating. I think that, you know, most believe that this probably kills the Hornets' playoff chances. They showed some signs of life here in the preseason so far, but he's the heart and soul of this team in terms of leadership, and I think, you know, he's the defensive middle linebacker too. So it's definitely a big loss for the Hornets. They're going to have to learn to play a different way. But, you know, it looks like they've built a little bit of confidence here in six games during the preseason. And if there's one coach out there that can, make some chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, it's probably Steve Clifford defensively. The guy's got a great defensive mind, really great at coaching the team, how to play good team defense. So you got to feel good about the Hornets' chances to at least tread water defensively without MKG.
Yeah, I was when we did our over-unders pod, the Hornets over of 32.5, this is before the injury, was like my best bet on the board. I thought that was really but then, you know, having him out for the year is obviously a huge blow. Good for him, at least, that he got his money in that extension. You know, but they have had a great preseason. I mean, they've been shooting a lot more threes. The defense, even without MKG, was great against the Bulls last night. They were switching everything and just, you know, giving up only tough shots to what's probably be a pretty good offensive team. So, what do you think? I mean, you really think their playoff chances are dead, or do they have more of a shot maybe than people are giving them credit for at this point?
Yeah, no, I don't think the playoff chances are dead. I mean, there's one reason for that. That's the Eastern Conference. I mean, you know, I think it is deeper this year. I don't know who actually got a lot better. I mean, Milwaukee comes to mind, but I mean, more teams, Indiana, Paul George back, but I mean, more teams are going to be in the mix. But, you know, the Hornets have, like you said, I've noticed a lot of switching defensively too. And I think that probably comes with just the fact that, you know, Clifford knows I don't have a bunch of guys who are going to be tuned in on the defensive end. It's just not their nature on the basketball court, like I would have with a guy like MKG and Nick Batum on the wings. So you got to do more switching and you've got to, it's going to take a lot more communication. But, you know, really what they've done in the preseason is not on the defense as much as it is in the offense. And they have been really efficient scoring the basketball, getting to the free throw line. It's more than anybody else in the preseason up to this point. In fact, I want to say they doubled their opponent in getting to the free throw line in six games. They shot 30 threes in, I think, all but one preseason game, attempted 30 in all but one. So, and they've made 10, at least 10 threes in every single preseason game. They only did that 9 times last year, I think. And they've already done that five in the preseason. So it's really the different nature of this roster in terms of how they're going to score the basketball. It really is going to be a true four-out, one-in style play. And I think that also benefits Al Jefferson. He gives him a lot more space, something he's really talked about a lot this preseason. So offensively, I think this is going to be the best, worst teams that fans, NBA fans have seen in quite a while. Now, it just, you know, going back to that, can they tread water defensively? Can they stay league average in that area? I think if they can on the defensive end, and if they do have a better than a above average offense in the league, yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no reason they couldn't be a 6-8 seed in the East.
Well, so basically, I mean, they got Kaminsky now. They got Batum. Those are two guys who are pretty solid shooters. Do you think that just simply that, and Jeremy Lin, his three-point shot has looked good in the preseason too. Do you think that simply those personnel changes are what's going to lead to this three happy style, or is a lot of it a scheme change as well?
I mean, I think a lot of it, I think it was going to be a scheme change before the MKG injury. I mean, like you mentioned a lot of them, like Jeremy Lin, I mean, he's been awesome in the preseason. He's been far outplaying Kemba Walker. I don't see him surpassing him in the starting lineup anytime soon, but he's been shooting the lights out. Nick Batum adds a totally different dimension on the wing in terms of the guy who can really play as a ball handler and ball screens, which I don't think a lot of people realize he can. He's a good passer. He's got good floor vision. He's got a quick trigger. He can shoot from anywhere on the floor from any range. You look at deep down the depth chart, but a guy who's going to get minutes, Spencer Hall, that guy can hurt you from deep. He's not going to be posting up. So really when he's out there playing center, you're almost essentially playing a five-out offense, high ball screen. He can pop or roll. Like you said, Frank Kaminsky, that guy he's as good already, I think, in terms of bigs in the NBA, guys that are 7 feet tall and attacking closeouts. That guy's unbelievable at attacking closeouts and in the pick-and-pop situation. His footwork's incredible when he puts it on the floor a few times. Jeremy Lamb, another guy that the Hornets have brought in, who is a very capable shooter, has not been consistent so far in the NBA, but he's going to get an opportunity this year that he has not been given yet in this league. So there's just a lot of new pieces, and all these guys I mentioned, they can all shoot the long ball, and they're all going to get rotational minutes this season. So, just a different dynamic, a different scheme, a lot of driving kick. And when you have bigs, like I said, they can attack closeouts. I mean, Hawks can do that too. It really makes the defense scramble.
Who do you think is going to take MKG's spot in the starting lineup? I mean, you've got Lamb, Marvin Williams has been starting some at the three in the preseason, which I can't say I really like that much since I just don't think he's good enough defensively. So who do you think will start? Who is your preferred pick to start at the either the two or the three, whether you want to call it that, with alongside Batum at the wing position?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I thought it was going to be Kemba, Jeremy Lamb, and sliding Batum to small forward. But in the last few games, Clifford has been experimenting with Marvin Williams at small forward on the wing and keeping Batum at two. And I like it. I'm with you. I'm not a huge Marvin Williams fan. But what I've noticed in the last few games, and let me preface this by saying Marvin Williams looks like he is in fantastic shape. And that guy looks like he's coming to camp is well shaped, is in good of a shape as he's been his entire time in the NBA, I think. And he seems to me much better fit defensively guarding threes than he is fours. The Hornets experimented with him a lot last year at the four. Small ball.
Yeah,
forward.
I thought that was kind of a disaster.
Yeah, he struggled there. I mean, he's not a great defensive player, but I've watched him guarding wings so far this preseason, and he looks more comfortable there, and he looks more effective there. I think I'm leaning towards now that Clifford's going to go with Kemba, Batum, Marvin Williams, Cody Zeller probably, and Al Jefferson is his starting lineup. And for no other reason other than Marvin Williams looks like he's in great shape. And Clifford's really happy with him and what he did in the offseason and how he's been playing so far. So I think that's what I'm leaning towards now. But it could go either way. I mean, I think Lamb could start a shooting guard and Batum could also slide to the three. But, that's losing MKG opens up a lot of different lineups that you wouldn't have thought about before, which is going to make Clifford's job a little bit harder. I think at the end of the day, though, he's going to probably slide Marvin into MKG's spot.
Yeah, if it's been working in the preseason, maybe you'll see that. I think also, Marvin always seems to kind of get these nagging injuries throughout the year that'll kind of slow him down. And he definitely, he's pretty, he's not really as old as he kind of looks out there sometimes. I think he's only like 28, 29, but, he could barely dunk anymore. So I think he's not really someone who is going to do much offensively other than just spot up, but he can hit shots. And I think at least if you want to switch some stuff defensively, which, it seems like they're going to be doing more of, then at least he can he's got the size to fight down on the block if he gets switched onto a big man. So maybe it'll work out okay. I thought he just wasn't very good last year and was one of the big weak links, but perhaps he'll be revitalized.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a lot of reports out of Charlotte, too. I've heard that they also love Jeremy Lamb there. They really are high on him and believe in his potential to develop in the league and become, a really good shooting guard. So I could see going either way. Clifford's the kind of guy with his starting lines, like most coaches, you know, he's going to go with matchup-based starting lineup. He's not, you know, seeking an offensive starting lineup or really even necessarily a defensive starting lineup, although if it came down to the two, he's probably going to lean in for defense. But he's going to, you know, seek to win the matchup game right out of the gates. And that's why I think Marvin probably gets the nod.
Yeah, so, and you mentioned you think Zeller is going to start at the four. It's good to see him taking threes as well this preseason. That was sort of what people were saying, how he was being sold coming out of Indiana as a guy who could be more of a stretch four than he showed in college. We didn't really see that in his first couple of years, especially from the three-point line. I think he only took like three threes all of last season, but now he's actually been hitting them in the preseason.
Yeah, yeah, he looks more comfortable taking him. Like any 7 foot guy, not named Frank Kaminsky, you know, he has a really, really long windup that takes him a long time to get the shot off. So he's got to be wide open. What I would like to see Zeller, but I mean, like you said, it's great to see him at least taking that shot now. What he's really got to work on is putting the ball in the deck. He puts it on the deck two times, it's either going to be a turnover or a wild shot almost every time. So, you know, he's really got to work on attacking closeouts, because if he's going to start picking and popping, then he's going to have guys running at him. And, you know, a guy like Frank Kaminsky, who's already really, really good at that, and that kind of skill fits so well into a scheme like the Hornets want to run this year with all these space and pace players, and, you know, attacking closeouts, dribble, drop, kick. So I think that Cody is going to see a little baptism by fire in that aspect this season. I think that's going to be good for his development. But Zeller's a lot stronger of a player, and he's a lot more of an imposing factor around the rim, I think, than other people realize too. And that's really his biggest. That's really right now his biggest asset on the basketball floor.
Yeah, he plays hard. He runs the floor pretty well. Also, he was someone who the advanced numbers, all the on-off stuff, really liked his defense a lot last year. Supposedly they adjust for this, but I thought part of that was maybe an artifact that he was replacing Marvin Williams at the four. What did you think of his defense last year? Do you think he's someone who can get to be a real good defender, or did those numbers maybe overstate what his impact was?
I mean, I thought that Zeller, I think he was really good last year defensively in spots against some really good players. And I watched him, one game sticks out in particular, in the game out earlier in the season. He guarded LaMarcus Aldridge and really, really held him to a tough night. And I thought that was a kind of a milestone defensive performance from Cody at the time. He doesn't have long arms, but he moves his feet well. I mean, like you said, if you ever see him run the floor, there's really no 7 footer that runs the floor better than Cody Zeller out there. So he moves his feet well. He can test shots. He does great at jumping vertically around the rim and taking good angles at blocking shots, which makes up for his lack of wingspan. And he just plays really hard. You know, he's a smart defensive player too, high basketball IQ. So I think he has the potential to become a really good defender in the NBA, and really a guy who can, if he increases athleticism, stays healthy, stays in shape, can guard, can switch on the wings, and give them a problem. So I think he has the potential to be a definitely above average defensive player, probably never an elite defensive player, just because, again, he's got T-Rex arms, little baby arms. So he's not going to reach out and get steals and get a ton of blocks, but his effort is going to make him a really good defender, I think, for a long time in the NBA. And that's, his greatest skill right now.
Yeah, and you'd like to see, too, him improve his finishing around the rim. He's only 57% from within 3 feet last year, which was a great improvement over his rookie year when he was really, really bad. But still, for a guy with his purported athleticism, maybe you'd like to see that happen a little more. And also what people kind of forget, too, is one of the reasons that people will be really bad at finishing around the rim is that there's no spacing. And so they're always going up against help when you've got more of a space floor, which I think they hope to have this year. Especially if he plays some minutes with Hawes, maybe that'll help his finishing and the finishing of everyone else on the roster.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's going to help. It's going to help Cody. It's going to help Al Jefferson. It's going to help any big that, prefers to play, inside the arc and in the paint. I'm excited to see Cody in this kind of system. I'm excited to see him play with a guy like Jeremy Lin. who's a really smart basketball player, super crafty in the paint, probably better than Kim, though. You know, Kim gets ahead of steam. He's making one move. He's getting to the rim, and he's making a play. You know, Jeremy Lin is very good at getting in there and probing, setting up his bigs around the rim. And I think a guy like Cody, I'd like to see them play together. I hope that Clifford favors a lineup featuring Cody and Lin, because I think they could be a good fit this year.
Yeah, so the fit among these bigs is really interesting to me. I mean, you've got Hawes, basically a center defensively, but mostly will shoot the ball outside, not really much of a post threat. He's pretty much, if you're playing pick and roll with him, he's going to pop most of the time. Zeller, a guy maybe a little bit better at rolling to the rim. If you're going to run Al Jefferson out there at center, I think you kind of need the best defensive option. And would you say the best defensive option at the four is Zeller?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's probably your best power forward defender.
Yeah, so I think, you know, that combination with with Zeller and Jefferson seems like a good one. But then if you want to play Jefferson and Kaminsky together, which would be a nice fit offensively with Kaminsky's shooting, then you really start to worry about the defense.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting with Frank Kaminsky, because I could see him getting minutes late in games with like a Kemba, Jeremy Lin, Nicholas Batum, Frank Kaminsky, Al Jefferson lineup. You know, I think that's a possibility. Frank's got to show that he can go in there and at least be competent when it comes to getting rebounds and being physical and really just not throwing up all over himself defensively. So just staying in position. I don't think anybody.
How's he coming along on that so far?
And, you know, I've watched him and I've not had to close my eyes watching. You know, I think he's working hard. I think he's starting to. He's a smart kid. I mean, that's what people have to understand about a guy like Frank Kaminsky. He may not have the physical tools to ever be a good defensive player, but I don't think that's why the Hornets drafted him. They drafted him because he's a great offensive player. He has an unknown skill for really 7-footers to shoot the ball if he can, put the ball on the floor, and create. And he's smart, so you got to think that he's going to buy into the system. He's going to be a quick learner. And what I've seen on TV, you know, watching these preseason games so far is that he is learning the system. I have not seen him get out of position very much. He's not gambling. He's looked to hold his own in the glass from what I've seen so far. So, again, I mean, if he's average defensively, that's going to get him on the floor a lot more this season. But that's what it's all going to come down to. He's a complete liability. Of course, it's going to be a frustrating, you know, rookie campaign for Kaminsky. But if he's out there and he can stay in position and he can get some rebounds, right, that's really the key. I think you're going to see him on the floor late in games, just because you can't deny how big of a weapon he is offensively with a guy like Al Jefferson. I mean, you really can't double with that lineup with Kim Walker, Jeremy Lin, Nick Batum, Kaminsky, and Jefferson. I mean, if you double Jefferson, you're going to pay for it with an open three. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, I feel like when Kaminsky is out there, or even Zeller for that matter, that I would probably just try and go small as the other team and say, all right, Frank Kaminsky, you're now going to – not only are you going to have to guard an athletic power forward, but you're gonna have to guard, you know, someone like Damari Carroll on the Raptors, someone like that, Nikola Mirotic on the Bulls, although that's not necessarily going small. But I wonder whether Kaminsky, because then, I mean, the other option is then Kaminsky can take that guy in the post, but you've already kind of got Al Jefferson there, and then you're going away from the whole four out idea. So that'll be an interesting strategic element to see what happens if they try and use Kaminsky at the four late in games.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I think that, I mean, that's what we saw last year. We saw Marvin play that position a lot. So, I mean, I would think to begin the season, like, you're not going to see a guy like Frank Kaminsky playing late game minutes. You see a guy like Marvin as a small ball four. But, you know, if he shows improvements and, you know, and Clifford, you know, it's going to come out of defense. Clifford likes the movement that he's making defensively, and if he thinks he's developing, you know, I do think he'll get him a shot. The Hornets put a lot on Frank Kaminsky when they drafted him, and they turned down.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, when they, I was not a fan of that. Still not. So, you know, it's hard for me to swallow Kaminsky just coming in and not playing big minutes right away. I mean, I'm not talking about 25 minutes right away, but not, I think he's going to flirt with 20 minutes a night. I think at least by midseason. Because the Hornets, I mean, they gave up.
Yeah, it'd be a disappointment
if he didn't,
right? Yeah, I mean,
and it just makes sense, right?
Yeah, and not only did they turn down that deal, but they also drafted him over Justice Winslow, and they drafted him over Miles Turner, both of whom could very very easily end up better than Kaminsky, although they probably aren't as ready to contribute immediately, which. You know, we'll talk about that too, how there seems to be quite the emphasis on the here and now for this team that's not really ready to compete for anything yet. But yeah, I mean, what do you think is the ceiling for Kaminsky? Can he live up to that draft status? My evaluation was, I think he's kind of going to be more of a center defensively with his quickness, although maybe not strong or athletic enough to protect the rim. And then that offensively, you know, his stretch will be great, but that he just won't be good enough defensively to really be a full-time four, and I kind of saw him more as ultimately finishing out as a high-end backup than a starter. What is your evaluation of what he can be ultimately?
I tend to agree with you in terms of being a high-end backup, you know, a high-value 6 or 7 man off the bench. I just think he's such a tweener defensively between guarding fours and fives, then I don't ever really see him finding an identity there. I mean, number one, he's got to get stronger. I mean, that's not breaking news. He's got to get a lot stronger.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, too. I mean, he spent 4 years in college. You know, how is he still only 230 coming out of college after 4 years at playing center? It's a little odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Wisconsin, like, they used him in a lot of very crafty and creative ways, and he roamed all around the court. So I don't think there was ever a, you know, huge emphasis on him getting on some, you know, monster weight training program. But, you know, now he's in the NBA, that's going to change if he's going to be able to guard any position. And so, you know, he has good footwork. He has good athleticism, obviously, for being 7 feet tall. So part of me thinks that, like, okay, he can guard – you know, small ball fours and spots, and, you know, if he puts on some weight, you know, maybe he can also do a little banging with fours that wouldn't be taking nothing to the block. He's like one of the more unique. I don't remember seeing a 7-footer really in his athletic mold. And if you, like, tell me if he reminds you of anybody, because he really doesn't remind me of any NBA player that I can remember.
Yeah, I would probably have to go back a pretty good ways, or maybe there are a bunch of guys who weren't that good that I'm not remembering. that could be part of it too. Yeah, maybe kind of like a Brad Lowhouse type or something. But he'll be better than Brad Lowhouse was. But
well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I just don't really remember seeing a guy with his kind of height and his athleticism and his ability to score the ball in so many different ways. So he's really hard to project, but I think at the end, I probably hedge and tell you and agree with you, you know, okay, this is probably a guy who's just a problem to handle coming off the bench, and maybe this is the guy that finds his way on to playoff rosters as a key reserve for a lot of years in the NBA. But at the same time, like, he has skills that no one else that size has, so there's also a real chance that he could pop and be an all-star. And in this ever-evolving, spacing style of NBA that goes faster and there's more switching and there's more three-point shooting, maybe Frank Kaminsky is the center of the future of the NBA. I don't know. There's a lot of different scenarios.
Yeah, but you said center. That's like the key to
right.
me is center.
Yeah.
Like, if he could hold up okay defensively as a center, that's when his shooting, his ability to shoot and pick and pop as a five, that's when you really cause problems for the other team. And, you know, maybe he and Zeller could work next to each other okay as a combination. I mean, Al Jefferson's a free agent at the end of this year. He could leave, and then maybe that's kind of the plan, is that those two guys together might be able to space the floor a little bit better, kind of open things up a little bit. But, you know, obviously everything is in total flux for this team beyond this summer anyway. But maybe that's the thought. But I think if he could hold up okay and be an average defensive center, then you're talking about a guy who could be really, really good because of what his floor spacing does. I just don't think his floor spacing does all that much at the four.
Yeah, right, right. Like, exactly. Like, so if he can't guard fours, what's the point of him, you trotting him out on the floor as a four? I completely agree with you there. So that is why it's hard to find a whole lot of playing time for him this season. But this team is deep. The Hornets are a lot deeper than people realize, I think. And so Clifford's got a tough job on his hands in terms of figuring out his lineups and who plays best with who and when to play who. So that's why I'm most excited about to watch the Hornets is what are the lineups going to look like and who's going to come to the surface as the key reserves. Because to be honest with you, I mean, there's a group of five or six guys who I could all see, you know, getting significant playing time that we haven't even talked about yet. So, you know, it's an interesting coaching job to pay attention to this year. This is one of those, like, if the Hornets won 46, 45 games, maybe more, you know, Steve Clifford would be in running for coach of the year.
Yeah, the only thing that I worry about for them is that second wing. I think that none of those guys are, you know, Marvin Williams, I'll believe it when I see it about him still being able to be a quality guy on the wing over the course of an entire season. Lamb, flamed out in Oklahoma City, has talent, but, you know, he still has never really kind of been able to get the system defensively. And then, you know, if it's not that, it's PJ Hairston or Troy Daniels. Neither of those guys are guys that you want to be counting on. And then maybe it'll be Lynn moving to the two at times as well, if he continues to play that well. So it seems like that last wing spot is going to have to kind of be more by committee, but it'd be nice if they had a solution they could count on. But, you know, when your starter goes down, that's where the situation you find yourself in.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the shooting guard position is the weakest on this roster right now. And, you know, the answer to that question is anybody's best guess. I think the Hornets really at this point are probably hoping that Jeremy Lamb takes that step. I hear and I get the sense that really the hope for PJ Hairston is not lost, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
He just can't seem to figure it out off the floor. His work ethic is not great, and he's a gunner. I mean, that's what he's always going to be on the floor. It's just not Clifford's type of player. So I think that they're banking a lot on Jeremy Lamb. Jeremy Lin has shown a lot in the preseason. I mean, a lot, and I think they're going to, you know, rely on him to play a whole lot of small ball shooting guard. And I think that Lynn Kindler could be dangerous, better than the Mo Williams Kindler experiment last year. But that position's in flux. And, you know, the Hornets brought in Damian Wilkins last week after the China trip to kind of shore up that position, just bring in a vet to give you a little bit more depth. But it's, to me, it all depends on Jeremy Lamb's development, at that position. I think he could be the long-term solution at starting at the two spot. But, you know, if he continues to be that very inconsistent player that he's been in OKC, in the first, 3 years in the league, then the Hornets are really going to have they're going to be in a bad spot in that position.
So what's your preferred crunch time lineup if you're Coach Clifford?
I think I go Kemba, Lynn, Batum. The four positions, the toughest one. I really probably Marvin Williams and then Al Jefferson. I want to say,
wow, Casey.
How are you gonna
stop anybody with that lineup though? It's Walker. I mean, Walker's like okay. Lynn is probably a liability at the two. Batum is like solid as a three, and then Williams and Jefferson are both big time liabilities at the four and five. I feel like you got to have Zeller in there or you're just never going to stop anybody.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, yeah. So you got to just kind of take your medicine with either Kemba or Lynn. One of them's got to guard the guy that's the 3-point shooter in the corner, and then one's got to guard the ball. Now, you're not going to be able to switch with those guys. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, so the alternative is, you know, the alternative is to, you know, I think take Jeremy Lin or Kemba Walker off the floor. You know, so you can switch more and just hide hide one of them on the corner three player. You know, but that's probably not going to happen. So, you know, and the Hornets played with this lineup a lot last year. I mean, imagine the exact same lineup minus Batum, so insert Batum, and then they played with Mo Williams and Kemba Walker, and it was, you know, that lineup was a defensive disaster. But Clifford definitely seemed like, you know, again, like most coaches, he seems to go with his best offensive lineup late in games and just hope that the team defense concept bails him out. Didn't work out a lot late last season, but that's probably right now what I think he's going to go with. I mean, so here's the question, like, if Jeremy Lin keeps up this play and Campbell Walker continues to be a below, you know, 38%.
Yeah, I knew you were going to get to this.
You know, so, like, at what point does Clifford have to kind of say, I got to go with Lin over Walker? Hornets fans don't want to hear that. But I don't know. Like, Jeremy Lin is really good in preseason.
Yeah, really, really good. I mean, and, you know, they're playing a pretty somnambulant Clippers team in China. You know, maybe you can take that out of the equation a little bit. But, yeah, for me, I mean, obviously Jefferson has to be out there. I think Zeller, especially if Zeller can just be enough of a threat from three the way he has been in the preseason, maybe that'll regress to the point where it's not tenable during the regular season. But I'll choose to believe it for now. I mean, as long as he can just shoot enough that he has to be guarded out there, I think that defensively he has to be there, because otherwise there's nobody who can kind of make up for Jefferson's weaknesses. Batum, and then the question is, are you going to go with, like, Lamb, Marvin Williams, or, like, Lin? And I think you just go with whoever is playing the best, and, you know, especially if you have two wing threats that you got to match up with, maybe you go Lamb. If Lin is on fire, then maybe you bring back Walker and let them both play together. I mean, the problem is that both of those guys, you know, are best with the ball in their hands, and Batum can do that a little bit too, so maybe there's kind of diminishing returns with both guys out there. I think if Lamb can actually play well enough to be out there, he makes the decision a lot easier. That would be, like, the best possible outcome for me, but, you know, he's got to prove it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Lamb's the best possible outcome as well. Here's the two, but, you know, here's the thing. Like, I think they're already scheming defensively for exactly what you and I are talking about right now. And I think that it involves Jeremy Lin and Kemba Walker on the floor together. And, you know, let's be honest, when the Hornets went to the playoffs 2 years ago, like, they weren't the first in the NBA to come up with this ultra conservative, like, sagging as deep as you possibly can, almost like a high school defense, and just pack it in and make teams take threes and shoot, you know, mid-range jumpers. But Clifford knows how to coach that style. So, like, if you can't switch with Kemba or Lin in a ball screen situation, fine. And just, you know, everyone being in gap principles, if you're on the wing, the big sinks, you know, 45 feet below the ball screen, and you just keep everything in front of you. I mean, that's what this team's been doing for two seasons since Steve Clifford took over anyway. So, I mean, sometimes it's...
Yeah, but that works a lot better with MKG on the floor. Without him kind of able to help out and cause some havoc from the weak side on those pick and rolls, you're kind of in a little bit more trouble. So that's a concern, but they have looked good so far, so maybe they can get around that this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would probably be the plan. I just think that late in games, you got to go with the lineup that can score your points and get you over the hump and pray for some stops. So, that would be my guess. To circle back around to your original question, I mean, I do think that the plan is still to play Kim and Lin together. Be conservative as possible and sag it in defensively and not give up any offensive rebounds. And that's Steve Clifford basketball. So, but we'll see. I mean, again,
and get back in transition, right? Like that's the other thing that he is so good at, is making sure that the other team doesn't get fast breaks.
Yeah. And something the Hornets had not looked great at, so far as preseason. Looked pretty good out in China. But like you said earlier, Clippers did not look like they were out there to play basketball. I don't know. I think that the reason they've looked less attuned to that so far this year in the preseason is just personnel. You know, like I think it takes shape. I think that you see a little bit more coach on the floor in those guys as we get into the regular season. But he's got his work cut out for him with this group.
One guy I wanted to ask you about before I get to your prediction is Al Jefferson. He took a step back last year, as may have been expected at his age, but also struggled with injuries. Now he supposedly is in better shape. This is a contract year for him. What are you expecting out of him this year?
I mean, honestly, I'm expecting a pretty big season from Al Jefferson. I mean, he's in good shape. He's probably playing on the most friendly offensive roster that he's played on since he's been in Charlotte. You know, all the cards seem to stack up in his favor. He's finally fully healthy, I think. He looks healthy. He's sprinting to set ball screens. He's rolling hard. He just looks younger out there. So, you know, all the cards kind of stack up for him to have a really good season. And obviously there's nothing but incentive for him to do that, being on a contract year. So, you know, I expect Jefferson to have a really good season. And, you know, the interesting thing is whether or not the Hornets, you know, seek to re-sign him going into next offseason. Because if Jefferson has a really good season, he'll get a max contract because of how the cap is rising, and it's going to continue to do that. And everyone and their, you know, brother and sister have cap space. So if that guy has a good season, he will get a max contract. So I expect Matt to have a good season. The question is, you know, will Hornets go after him next summer? I don't know the answer to that quite yet.
Yeah, I guess a lot of it depends on kind of how things turn out this year. And to that point, what is your predicted record for the Hornets, and then a best case, worst case scenario?
Predicted record is going to be kind of shy on this one, a little conservative. I think they're going to 41 wins, 41 losses. I just think this is
even without MKG. Huh? That's a lot higher than Vegas would have them, but
Right.
Everyone goes over at school.
Yeah. I don't think. What does Vegas have them at?
They were at 32.5 before the MKG injury.
Yeah, see,
and now I think they're like 31. Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous too. I mean, I before the MKG injury, I probably would have had him at like, you know, right around 41. Now I think it's, you know, I'm thinking like 34, 35 is my thought. But you sound like you're higher on them.
Yeah, and that's like banking on they don't take on another serious injury, and actually they stay relatively healthy. But yeah, I think this can be a 500 ball club. I really do, and I think this is a team that can compete for a playoff spot late into the season. I know that most don't think that, but they got some ability offensively. If they connect the dots a little bit on the defensive end and just figure out a way to be average, there's really no reason that this roster can't compete in the Eastern Conference. So yeah, I'll say 41 wins.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the components of kind of how they get there, right? So last year, they were 33-49. Expected record based on their point differential was 32 wins, so pretty close there. 28th in offense last year and 9th in defense. I think that when you look at some of the guys they brought in, Hawes, Kaminsky, Batum may help a little bit, but now they don't have MKG for the whole year. I think it's hard to guess that they would be better in defense than the 9th that they were last year. So if you expect them to improve, you think that that 28th ranked offense is going to get a lot better. So that's kind of what you're thinking is then, or am I wrong?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You hit it down the head. I mean, I think that, okay, so here's kind of my theory about this team and why Coach Clifford is going to become a better coach this year. I think that when you've watched him in the preseason, you've seen a much more free-flowing system offensively. You know, in the last few years, it was almost like watching them play keep away until the last 10 seconds of the shot clock, giving it to Jefferson and praying that he scores. So now I think that Clifford has to spend less time worrying about offense. I mean, every coach should spend more time, I think, on offense. But, you know, with this group, I think that you let the guys create their own offense. You just have more offensive-minded players who I think are creative, think more outside the box in the offensive end. They're better players on that side of the floor. So this gives Clifford more opportunity to work with this group defensively, not worry about scoring the ball so much, kind of holistically letting the numbers improve themselves on the offensive end, which I think they will, and I think they've shown a lot of that preseason. So I think it gives the opportunity to him to work a lot more with the defense, coach up some of these guys that aren't as good on the defensive end. which is really most of the players are going to see a lot of minutes this year, and teach them the team concept that has made him a successful coach in the NBA, a successful head coach in the NBA so far. So, you know, how they get there is I think they have an above-average NBA offense in efficiency, and I think that's
wow, possible. That would be a remarkable jump from last year.
It would be, yeah, I think it would be, but I think if you look at some of the – I mean, this roster – so when people talk about the Hornets in the past, the Hornets of this year, I don't think a lot of people understand how different this roster is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it does,
it's
and the system
different.
Is going to be much different, yeah.
Yeah, and the scheme's going to be different. So, like, that's a huge jump, yes. But, like, the pieces that are going to be on the floor are literally almost completely opposite. So I think it's possible. Now, what I'm probably reaching on, I think actually what I'm reaching on more is to assume that this can be an average NBA defense. So, but that's I think that's how they get there.
Yeah, because they have not defended really nearly as well without MKG. I think that they were, like, you know, had like the 20th ranked defense or something when he wasn't on the floor. But yeah, you're right. It is really the offensive transformation is going to be big. The starters on this team last year on the wing were Gerald Henderson and MKG, neither of whom are really 3-point shooters at all.
At all.
So now that you have Batum and you're going to have someone like Lamb, who, you know, I think at least can hit an open standstill 3-point shot, or if you're going to go with someone like Lynn who can create a little bit more, that really is going to make a pretty big difference. Then you throw in Kaminsky, Hawes shooting threes, Zeller potentially shooting threes as well. And, I mean, because, like, they had to play Marvin Williams last year, despite how bad he was defensively, because you had MKG and you had Henderson, and there was just no other shooting on the roster. So I agree with you. I think that they can be better. And just also the fact that they have now adopted a little bit more of a free-throwing system. I mean, they're never going to get any offensive rebounds because that's just, like, not Clifford's style. He wants to get back. They're always at they're 29th in offensive rebound percentage last year. But I agree with you. I think that they can be, I don't know about average, but I think they can, because I still don't really like that many guys who can create one-on-one on this team. I mean, Lynn and Walker as your best creators, maybe not the greatest. But, yeah, I think they could get into, like, you know, 17, 18, 19. That area.
I mean, no, it's interesting. I look at the roster, and when I realized this, it was kind of an epiphany for me. Like, there's literally, well, I'm gonna say there's two guys on the team that like are not gonna take 3-pointers on the entire roster. Cody Zeller and Al Jefferson, but Cody Zeller is gonna take some 3-pointers. Probably not many. Maybe you know, like 40, 50 all season. I don't know. Not many, but. You know, that's really alarming. I mean, especially for a Hornets fan, the guy that's watched this team for a long time where I'm used to two starting guards not being able to even think about shooting a 3-pointer. Now there's only one guy on the roster who's not capable of taking one. So that's a big time facelift. So, you know, there's that. And then I look at guys like Jeremy Lin and Jeremy Lamb and Nick Batum and some of the guys who are going to, you know, be standing around that arc catching the ball, being able to attack and close out. Those guys are good at creating in terms of their before vision and their compassion. Nicholas Tim is a great passer. You know, Jeremy Lin obviously sees the floor very well. Kim Walker, you know, as well. I think Jeremy Lamb's the one, again, who you wonder, you know, how much of a creator, good passer he can be. But I think they have a collection of guys that is built for a dribble drive kick system, probably more so than maybe people want to realize. So, I mean, I definitely think it's possible for them to be an average to slightly above average NBA offense. And they're a hard group to predict right now because you don't have a sample size. It's all new pieces. You take the best defender out of the equation, and now you have to play even more different than you already were going to play. So I think they're probably one of the more harder teams in the NBA to predict. But they're going to be fun to watch, I think.
Yeah, and that's something to be said for sure, that it's kind of been one of the more unwatchable teams so far, and hopefully that's something that'll be changing. And I do share your concerns about the defense. If you really go down this roster, you know, there's the Clifford magic. You think of this team can be a good defensive team, but if you really think about it, maybe you could look at Batum and Zeller as maybe being average for their positions. And I think basically everyone else who's going to play on this team is probably a below average individual defensive player. Maybe Lamb can improve, but he really struggled executing the system in Oklahoma City. That was a big reason why Brooks didn't trust him. So, yeah, I think, you know, this is going to be Clifford's greatest job yet on the defensive end.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. So, yeah, that's why I say if he does tie this thing together and he gets his team to 40-some wins, he's got to be in the Coach of the Year conversation.
All right, so the last question I wanted to ask you is, what grade would you give for the team's overall management, ownership? I mean, we'll say, when did Rich Cho get hired? Was that like three years ago, 4 years ago?
It was longer than that because his first move was getting rid of Jared Wallace. So that was, gosh, that would have been 5 years ago.
2011. So,
yeah 4 years ago, yeah.
What grade would you give, you know, both Michael Jordan and Rich Cho, the whole regime, what would you give them, you know, since Cho came in, basically?
So, like, I think it started with the right idea, you know, in terms of, like, you had Steven Jackson and Gerald Wallace, and, you know, the first thing Rich Cho did when he came in, he said, hey, you guys are not going to win with this group that's currently constructed. You guys shed these players to start over. So they did that, and, you know, then we all witnessed one of the worst teams in NBA history, winning percentage wise it was. And then the rebuild, you know, kind of began, and Kemba came in, and then you sign Al Jefferson, surprisingly, you know, summer of 2013. And then you have the one really good season but really good in terms of what the rest of the league expected of them. And all of a sudden, Michael Jordan lost his patience and he had a winning season. And he fell in love with, you know, now again, which is kind of how he ran the team before Rich Cho. And, you know, there was all this talk about Cho having the reins, to the player personnel part of the job and, you know, Michael Jordan being much more off hands when it comes to that. And now I see much of the opposite. You know, I just don't see that trade. That the Hornets turned down, the Boston offered them in the draft and drafting Frank Kaminsky. Like, I just don't see that being a Rich Cho move. I really do not. You know, he's an asset collecting, very, very creative, thinking outside of the box, modern day general manager. And we've seen little moves like that all around the place since he's been in Charlotte. But what they did in the draft, this past summer kind of told me everything I needed to know about where this front office is right now and about who is actually making the calls, and that's Michael Jordan. It's, you know, it's really disappointing. You know, I think a large factor of that, Nate, is, you know, they went to the playoffs in 2014, then the rebrand came, and I think that, you know, number one, like I said, MJ fell in love with winning again, and he wanted to win now, even though the team probably wasn't ready for that. And then he didn't want to lose the momentum of the rebrand, yeah. and didn't want to lose that marketing opportunity with his team. And so I understand that too. But now, like, here you are, one injury away from being maybe possibly a gutter Eastern Conference team, and down goes MKG, and now we have no idea. So, like, that's kind of what you get. Like, when you try to win with a team that's just not ready to win, we'll see what happens this season. I don't know. I mean, there's a little bit of hope, but, you know, I think that Michael Jordan lost his way after the Bobcats went to the playoffs. And I think that if this season goes bad, that he's going to look at getting rid of Rich Cho, and he might look at getting rid of Steve Clifford and starting over again. And here we go again, but it's really disappointing. I wish that guy, Michael Jordan, that is, I wish he would let the guys that he hires do their job, especially in terms of player personnel and drafting and free agent wise. I wish he would let those people do their job more than I think he does. He had the right idea, and I just think he lost his way.
I would. So what would your grade be then for just the totality of ownership and management over these last 2 years?
I would say probably a C minus.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think there's some good things on the ledger. The Jefferson signing was kind of panned at the time, but you know, they had the cap space. He turned out to be probably a value contract. Had a really nice year, especially that first year. I think the Lynn contract is going to be a nice one. Overall, I think the number one thing that you didn't even mention that is the reason I would kind of give them, I would say probably a D, is I think their drafting has just been bad. I think MKG is a nice player, but I think he was a reach at number two, and maybe just because of the intangibles. I wrote at the time that Andre Drummond should have been the pick, because there's just nobody, you know, despite his issues at Connecticut, there are maybe, you know, 10 guys in NBA history that have his combination of strength, speed, and jumping ability. He just was a genetic marvel. Then the next year, Cody Zeller over Nerlens Noel, not good. And the idea was, all right, you know, we got to get this. It was another one of those kind of short-sighted moves, right? Oh, this guy can't contribute this year. Well, rookies don't contribute in their first year anyway. And, you know, and Zeller was basically, his first year was almost below replacement level. They would have been better just having some other guy in off the scrap heap. It would have done just as well probably that first year. And then you would have had Nerlens Noel, who would have been, you know, a great building block as well. And then they drafted Noah Vonleh the next year. Finally a guy who is one of the youngest guys in the draft. I thought the right pick there at the time. And then they trade him away a year later for Batum, who can be a free agent. And either, you know, Charlotte has not been a place that has usually retained their own. So you're either going to have to probably give him a borderline max contract for 5 years to keep him in this cap environment, or you let him go and you lost Vonleh for 1 year of when the odds are you're probably not going to make the playoffs. So I think it's a fair question that you raise about how much of this is Cho. I think Cho is a really smart guy. He's one of the kind of foremost analytics oriented, assistant GMs back in the day. But then, you know, maybe it's Jordan getting involved, or who knows what it is. But yeah, I think when you look at both the fact that they've missed in the draft and then how short-sighted they've been, I think a D is really, you know, that might even be generous. I might even go D minus overall, because they did get this team into the playoffs 1 year, but you know, what does that really mean ultimately in the NBA? And it's not even like it's going to be sustainable, it looks like, for them to even stay at that level now.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, I would defend the MKG pick. I think he's probably the pick. There was Anthony Davis in the rest of the draft. I mean, so I think he had the high ceiling there. I mean, and he's still, I mean, the guy's still super young. He's 22 years old. So and you can't predict injuries, and that's really been his. No one realizes it, but he's almost missed as many games as Derrick Rose has to this point in his NBA career, to what Rose went through. So that's a big problem for him. You can't predict that. I think Cody Zeller, I would probably defend that draft pick a little bit more than you would, just because that draft was horrible. And then Nerlens Noel had the injury, and so everyone got super scared at the last second. And I think every front office went through that.
Philosophy is you didn't, like, they were bad for so long, right? And so the whole reason to be bad, they stripped the team down. The reason to be bad is, we want to get a superstar in the draft. And they picked two guys, I think, in MKG and Zeller, who are nice picks. I think they're both going to be nice NBA players. But at that point, you know, what makes you a good team for a long time is getting a guy who has the upside and taking a little bit of a risk. And when they take a risk, it's like, you know, we're taking a risk to make sure that, you know, we trade away this ninth pick. We're taking a risk on this guy for 1 year, so we can chase the eighth seed. Their risks aren't intelligent risks, where at least they have like a large payoff both in the draft and in their moves. And that's really what my problem kind of is.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And here's the other thing: is the Hornets, Charlotte put themselves in the situation to get the number one draft pick a few times and got bit both times. So they haven't had luck in the lottery either. Al Jefferson, it was like a blessing and a curse, because he came in, he killed it in 2013-14. They went to the playoffs. The future all of a sudden looked bright because you had all these young players around him. And then he got hurt. And then MKG got hurt. So, I don't know. I'm with you. There's a lot of – they keep changing courses because they can't find their footing. But then on top of that, like, a lot of it's bad fortune. But you know what? Like, that's also part of the NBA. Like, why the Warriors won the NBA championship last year? I think it's because they were the best team. But, like, they had to have a lot of luck to get there, right? They didn't have to go through San Antonio or L.A. So, like, what people forget a lot is that it takes so much darn good luck to be successful in this league. And, like, you obviously need a star. And the Hornets have missed their opportunity to get a few of those. But then you
yeah, but they
so
haven't even taken the opportunity, is my point.
Right, right. Well, like, I mean, if you consider them, like, everyone was big on the tanking thing. And, God, the Hornets did a better job of tanking than anyone ever done. but they didn't get that break, right? Like, they missed.
Yeah.
They got the number two pick. They got NKG. So now they've gotten a guy who's missed 40% of his NBA games to this point, and we're a lottery ball away from getting Anthony Davis. I mean, that was the difference. I mean, so, like, if they get that lottery ball, then what they did is the best thing that anyone's ever done. Right? So
I don't disagree with that aspect of it at all. I think they did the right thing there. It's just that they didn't ultimately follow through on the strategy by going for guys who really had the upside.
Yeah, no, I mean... Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, like, this last draft pick bothers me more than any of the other ones have, purely on the opportunity that they had. I mean, they had a chance to get 4 first-round draft picks. I would have drafted Justice Winslow before him. I would have drafted Stanley Johnson before Frank Kaminsky. I was very high on that guy before the draft. But
I think Miles Turner is going to be better than Kaminsky, too, when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I wouldn't tend to disagree with you there either. But you know, like, I just look back and – you know, here's the thing. Like, I look back at every single year, and I try to think, okay, what was my mindset when that decision was made? And I always find a way, and I think this is part of being, like, a pulling for a bad team, right? Like, you always find a way to talk yourself into the decision that was made. So, like, I still haven't gotten to that point with Kaminsky, but, like, I'm trying to find a reason right now, and maybe you picked up on some of that as we talked tonight, of, like, all right, here's what this guy's really going to bring, and it's all going to make sense, but... No, you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, they make some decisions that really make you, if you're frustrated, you maybe scratch your head, but as is Charlotte Hornets basketball.
All right, well, was there anything else you're thinking about for this season before we go that you didn't get a chance to talk about? I think we hit on most everything, but if there's anything else that's kind of popped out to you, I'd love for you to share it if you got it.
I think that... So one of the storylines I would watch is, like, Nicholas Batum. I think he's got a better opportunity to add in the NBA so far. I think if things go well for the Hornets up until the All-Star break and they're in position for a playoff spot, I think Batum's a kind of under-the-radar candidate to be an All-Star just because he's a guy who can be one of the best three-tool players in the league, you know, in terms of scoring the ball, rebounding the ball, and assisting other players. So, you know, I think that if I have one under-the-radar prediction, it would be that Nick Batum, or one off-the-charts prediction, it would be that Nick Batum will be first All-Star since Jared Wallace for Charlotte.
That's interesting. You know, as soon as you said that, the direction I thought you were going in was if things don't go well, maybe they trade him as well. Because I mean, I think he's going to have a nice year, to be sure. But if they're, you know, 10 games below 500 – at the All-Star break, and it's kind of looking like, hey, this isn't really working out. He's not happy here. It's hard to really craft a vision. He's 27. We understand we're not going to be good for a while, and we can trade him and get a first-round pick. You know, I mean, if you look at that, right, like if Jeff Green and Aaron Aflalo can get first-round picks last year, Nick Batum, who's way better than either of those guys, definitely could.
Yeah.
So maybe they decide to cut bait, but that again would be somewhat counter to the organizational philosophy. Or maybe they feel like, hey, this guy, you know, we're gonna have to pay this guy $20 million. That seems like a lot, but again, they have a lot invested in him. They traded away a guy who was the number 9 pick a while ago. You would have thought was part of their future to get him. So maybe trading him away again, you know, that might be the right idea because you've got some sunk costs. MKG is out. You didn't know that at the time you made the trade, and it's just not going to work with Batum. I mean, that would be kind of the right way is to say, like, all right, you know, we traded for him. We didn't work out. Let's get what we can for him. But I don't know if the organization is quite ready to embrace sunk costs in that manner if it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I think you're dead on. I think it goes one way or the other. I don't think that Batum has an average season, just what he's done in the NBA so far. I mean, the Hornets aren't just going to pay him a max, you know, next offseason because of that. And maybe that was the idea, like when they made that trade, right? So they said Bonla and Henderson, send them packing, get Batum in. Who Charlotte and Rich Joe has been chasing for a long time. He tried to get Batum when he traded Wallace the first time, his first year as GM.
Yeah.
So maybe he wanted to get Batum and said, look, this either works out or it doesn't. But at the trade deadline, this guy's going to be worth gold in its weight, you know? So we're going to get a first round pick for him. So, like, let's just try the Bonla pick again a few years because they thought they failed on it. And maybe that's the idea. And at that point, Jefferson comes off the books and you're ready for a rebuild. So, you know, it's tough to guess, but I think it kind of goes one way or another for Nicholas Batum. I think that's a part of probably the risk of getting him for a 1 year rental.
All right. So where can we catch up with you and the site on Twitter?
So queencityhoops.com as part of the ESPN True Hoop network. And then you can catch me on Twitter at QCHSpencer.
All right, awesome. Thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. As for me, follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Same thing for Facebook. If you want to catch up with some of my writing, I got a piece coming out on the Cauldron, probably by the time you listen to this, talking about what some of the 2016 free agent destinations are and breaking down their cap situations. Also, if you want to support the podcast, the cap space code, which is all one word on DraftKings or SeatGeek, is a great way to do that and help our sponsors who will then pay us and help keep this show on the air. If you don't want to do that, also an iTunes rating or ranking is really appreciated as well. That has been instrumental in our success so far. Or just tell your friend. That would be another great thing to do to support the podcast. So thanks again to Spencer for coming on. We will talk to you all next time.